Stock Mike back in the studio with Bob Collins substituting for Paul Prydecker. So that was pretty fun.
It was.
It's always nice to hear stories about how people take several things they love and thread all those things together, family flying and
music. Yeah, we were talking beforehand, and they were talking about the mechanics of music are very much the same as the mechanics of flying an airplane, where you see what's coming, you have to anticipate what's coming, you can't get behind it.
Yeah.
And, I love people who have musical talent. I wish I had a shred of it.
Well, we're going to switch gears now, and we're going to talk to another of the participants in the International Federal Partnership, those agencies and entities that are on display this week in the Federal Pavilion. So today it's NORAD, the North American Air Defense, what's the last word?
Air
Command.
Space Defense Command.
Okay, thank you. And we're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tom Courtney Stork. And welcome. Thanks.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Well, we try to come to Oshkosh every year, and our fourth year here, so we're happy to be here.
So the folks who come by your booth are hearing what message from NORAD?
So our message here and at every show we go to is to try to reduce the number of TFR violators that we have, and particularly in the TFRs we deal with, which are security TFRs, which would generally be presidential travel. We just had one at the RNC and DNC. And we still get a fair amount of folks accidentally violating them. It's a big number to us. It's a small percentage of the general aviation community, obviously, but we're trying to minimize the amount of people accidentally violating TFRs, using resources to figure out who they are, and getting themselves in trouble. So we try to educate folks on how to know where TFRs are at, how to operate in and around them safely, and how to avoid them if necessary, and what to do if they ever do find themselves getting intercepted.
Did you say you were working both the conventions?
No, we had a TFR at both conventions.
Yeah.
We had people.
Yeah.
I was not there, but I've worked them before. So
yeah. Just one at each?
We had...
I thought you said there was a TFR that was busted at each.
Oh, there's at least one at each.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a... I don't have the numbers, but I think at the RNC there was a few a day, but that's not a lot. We've had TFRs typically in places where there's a lot of general aviation traffic, because most of the violators are general aviation, as you would expect, because they're the ones most likely to be flying VFR, not talking, not squawking. So,
but it's not like the conventions were, quite little affairs that didn't receive much publicity. That's the part I don't understand.
No, it's interesting how you get a few violators. And like I said, you get more of them in places like where there's a lot of general aviation going on or not a Class B airspace, like down in Florida, sometimes around Palm Springs. But it bites people in where there's Class B airspace as well, because we get a few people who try to go out under the Class B airspace, but if there's a TFR there, there's no under, so it goes to the surface, and we wind up having a violator. So,
when you're flying along ready to intercept somebody in an RV-7A, let's just use that as an example, you just assume they're just decent folks that have just messed up, right? But at the same time, you've got to kind of focus on the possibilities, right?
Absolutely. And we're supporting whatever agency is defending whatever's on the ground, which is typically the Secret Service. And we're just helping them and other law enforcement agencies provide protection for something on the ground.
Yeah.
When we intercept somebody, the assumption is always going in, it's just somebody making a mistake. But we're always careful, like any agency providing security, to make sure that, it's not escalating to something that could be threatening. So we do tell folks if they do get intercepted, first thing we'd like you to do is remain predictable. Don't be trying to dive for the ground or this is my day to try to dogfight an F-16. That just makes law enforcement and us a lot more nervous about your intentions. So So our assumption is basically you're making an error until you start to do things that might make us think otherwise.
What do you do to try to keep the individual calm so that they don't forget to aviate, so that they don't make a mistake just out of nervousness?
Hopefully we try to get them on the radio. So the things become a lot more complicated if you can't talk to them. So, the procedures, if you do get intercepted, you'll probably see a wing rock. You're probably not talking to anybody to begin with, or you wouldn't have got intercepted. You got told over the radio. We'd like you to wing rock back just to acknowledge that, okay, I see you. And then try to come up on 121.5. That'll be our meeting place, and you'll get the message that you're in restricted airspace and you've been intercepted, and we'd like you to turn this heading right away. And if you do that, that's we'll probably be done with you, at least on our end.
Yeah. Do you require people to land when they're intercepted, or can they, once you turn them away, can they just go off there wherever they need to go?
And it depends, and it's really up to the security folks who we're supporting, which would be typically a federal law enforcement agency or the Secret Service. And it has a lot to do with the security situation at whatever event it is, your behavior. So occasionally folks get told to land, maybe 50-50 at a certain airport. Occasionally they get asked to, you're allowed to continue to their destination. Either way, you're probably going to get met by some sort of law enforcement.
Yeah.
Just to see if all the things you said in the air seem true when you got to the ground.
Yeah. What's the dumbest thing people have done when you've tried to intercept them? And try to use real names as you, if you could.
My fellow booth mate is over briefing at the seaplane base, and it's apropos that he is, because he did intercept during a presidential TFR of a seaplane over Chicago. And it was over the lake, but it was near Chicago. And the seaplane pilot started weaving down at like 50 feet, and then he landed so he wouldn't get caught. So
yeah.
They orbited above him, finally got him on the radio, and told him that here's a number you need to call. And he didn't have a pen, and he didn't have a paper. And so he eventually got the message of who he needed to call and talk to. So
we're talking with Tom Courtney, Lieutenant Colonel Tom Courtney from NORAD, who goes by Stork.
Yes, sir.
And you used to fly F-16s, right, before you were promoted?
Yep. Well, I flew them for a while till I got too old and sent to a desk. So most of my career, that's all I've flown. So about 2,300 hours in the F-16.
Yep. So it's probably no big deal for you to see the demonstrations this week with the F-16, but you know, for the rest of us, kind of a big deal.
I think it's still very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I enjoy. We come out of our little booth to watch those guys. Yeah.
So in these demonstrations, you know, they'll get all dirty and they'll slow to. They'll ask the pilot over the PA, "So how slow are you going?" And the answer I think I heard was 120 knots.
Yeah.
So is that how you intercept a GA pilot?
I think that might have been the F-18. The F-16's got not quite going to get that slow. They're going to get as slow as they can, which is going to be in the high, you know, a little below 200 knots, depending on the configuration, how much gas they have. They'd like to get right next to you because the visual signals are easier than that. But if you're slower than that, you'll probably see him do multiple passes with wing rocks and trying to give you signals while he's going on the way by. A lot of times they're just trying to get your tail number so that they can make calls to whatever phone you have on record. You see that a lot, where they'll call home and get a hold of your wife once they find out what the airplane is and go, he's okay, right? And the airplane wasn't stolen. Those kind of things help us resolve the situation. So you might see multiple passes to make that happen.
I got to hear the story of how you decided on Stork.
Well, first of all, we don't decide. Other people decide for you.
Yeah, they do.
The story's generally not suitable for radio.
Yeah.
But it was a long time ago.
So we have to imagine how you got Stork in a story that can't be told on the radio.
Yes.
Yeah, but you know, they say radio is theater of the mind.
Yeah, it's working pretty well for me right now.
There you go.
Talk about the TFRs that are not so temporary. And what your role is in maintaining those. I mean, the big ones around Washington.
Yeah, so there are some TFRs that aren't temporary. Washington isn't even called a TFR. It's the Special Flight Rules Area. So the FAA's come right out and said, that's not temporary. Our role in that is almost the same as it's completely the same as security TFRs around the President or the Super Bowl, except it's permanent. So interesting enough, we probably have less violations there than a lot of places that are temporary, because the folks who fly there are familiar with it, and you know, it's not a surprise. What makes most people violate TFRs is the T, that they're temporary. So they're flying somewhere they fly every day, and they don't talk to anybody, and all of a sudden the president's 25 miles away, and they're not supposed to fly that day, and they didn't do any mission planning, didn't call flight service, and aren't aware of it. Mm-hmm. So DC's not so bad.
Do you see more or fewer or the same as right after 9/11, when we didn't know a whole lot about being intercepted and TFRs and such?
It's trending a little better the past few years. Of course, we'd like to take credit for that, being here at Oshkosh. But it's getting a little better. We're having less violations per TFR hour the past couple of years. We've had about the same absolute violations, but the TFR hours have gone up. So the math is a little better, unfortunately.
And is that because of the election year?
Well, I'm not privy to why the president travels, but typically it's more in an election year.
Yeah, and 4 years ago it was. They pop up out of nowhere on campaigns.
They do. I mean, almost every security TFR is going to be published 48 hours prior. Mm-hmm. There are little shorter ones, like when the president went to Dallas due to the tragedy there. Mm-hmm. I think we only got about 30 hours notice on that. But almost always, presidential travel's in stone. Yeah. The pop-up TFRs you're going to see, we don't get involved with, might be fires, law enforcement. I would encourage you'll have the Forest Service guys in here at some time, and mm-hmm. they're frustrated with the amount of people and drones entering forests and just
we did talk to them earlier in the week, right?
So, yeah.
So, what do you think is the most prevalent means that pilots do inform themselves and take action?
I think talking to folks, the most prevalent means of finding out where the TFRs are, to all the wonderful electronics tools that are available on iPads, WingX Pro, and all of those tools. If you keep that up to date, the TFRs are going to come up. You'll see them. And I don't speak for the FAA, but their official answer is always going to be, you got to call flight service. So, you know, everything is not suitable for navigation until you call flight service. So we encourage folks to do that, especially if they don't have an electronic means of seeing where things are. That's the absolute answer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Colonel Tom Stork Courtney from NORAD has been with us today. Thanks so much for spending time today.
Thanks for having me and letting us get our message out.
And Bob Collins, we are coming close to the end, this very fortunate period of time that I've had a chance to spend with you again.
We should do this again in a year.
Well, you know, that would be great fun.
Yeah.
I always learn a lot from you when I hang around you.
Oh, gosh.
And, yeah, well, it's true.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. I mean, if nothing else, separate the radio stuff apart. I certainly learned a lot about your experiences building your RV and sustaining the effort. And now you've got this whole other story that we do not have time to talk about this year about how you lost and regained the ability to fly the plane you built.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting with the medical reform now, too. It's going to be an interesting story going forward, but I'm anxious to find out how that's going to work. So
yeah, well, by this time next year, we will have passed the point at which it has to either become law or we're going to play like it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it comes along. I look forward to coming back and talking with you again and hearing about that you've gotten back in the air and you've gotten your check ride and you flew an F-18 or an F-16 here.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's second on my list after the 162, so yeah, that's fine.
Same thing.
This is Stuck Mike, Squawk 1200, ending another hour. I'll see you tomorrow, and this is EAA Radio.